Hi, I'm Gillian.
And I'm Pierre, and you're listening to Breaking Through Careers, the podcast that gets your career questions answered.
Each episode, we speak to an ordinary person from a well-known or not so well-known profession so that we can find out what they do on a day-to-day basis and what they did in order to get there.
What do you most like about your job?
What do you actually do day-to-day?
What advice would you give someone?
What do you find most challenging about your job?
How do you balance your family?
Tell us something that you're really good at.
Tell us something you're really bad at.
How much do you get paid? Welcome back to The Speech and Language Therapist. In part one, Tora talked us through her average day, told us that speech and language therapists can work in schools, prisons, courts, and hospitals, and also discussed whether or not she puts marbles in people's mouths like they do in The King's Speech. Now let's find out what Tora doesn't like about her job.
I heard all the positives. So what don't you like about your job?
It's challenging and it's emotionally challenging. It's hard. It's hard on your emotions in that you're dealing with people at a stage where, you know, there's a sense of grief a lot of the time in what's going on. So be that with an adult who's had an acute illness like a stroke, there's a loss of ability there. So you're dealing with people at a very vulnerable time in their lives. And a lot of the time in what we do, you build such a strong relationship because we don't just walk in and out and see someone one day. A lot of the time, we might know them over weeks or months, and for some children, years. So you get to know their family and them really well. And you can become, in a way, a bit of, you know, you're a support network and you can become a bit of a counselor nearly. And that's quite a lot to take on sometimes. And that wouldn't be the same across every speech and language therapy role. It would depend on the client group you work with. And there are some people we would go and see once for certain assessments, but there's definitely an emotional impact of my role. And that can be tricky. And there's also a large demand on our time. We have too many children for me to see. I can't do it all. And that can be quite difficult because it can feel inequitable. You know, especially some vulnerable groups of children, maybe from socially economically disadvantaged areas, you know the amount of support that they need. And it can be frustrating when it's difficult to get that in place and there's just not enough funding and things like that. So it's a tricky job in those senses.
I suppose emotion toll is very important in a way. What, from your personal perspective, you don't have to answer this, but like you work with industry for a while, what has helped you? You know, what are some of the tools that you have done that to overcome that?
Yeah, definitely. So when I started working, I did work in an area with very vulnerable children. So a lot were looked after children, perhaps known to social work. There was a lot of those concerns. They were from areas of socioeconomic disadvantage. And I would go home at night and I would find it hard to stop thinking about those children. You know, I might be in a meeting that day hearing about some real concerns about their well-being. And I would find that hard to switch off. But I've learned over time that work stays at work. And you find those ways to unwind and not get too emotionally invested. And I think part of that is accepting that you're doing what you can and just knowing that that's the best that you can do, but also just finding those ways to relax. So I love being outside. I feel better outside. Yeah, it just makes me automatically feel better. So I'll get out hiking. Living in Aberdeen, there's a lot of great nature around you. So I'll go out to the beach, I'll go hiking, I'll just unwind by just completely stepping away from it. And that's really important, whatever your job is, not just my job. You've just got to have that work-life balance and find those ways that work for you.
What do you like most about it?
Great crack. So for anyone who's not Irish, it's good fun. I get to play all day. I get to play with kids. I get to laugh with kids. I've played Mr. Potato Head with him about a million times, but it's good fun and you make a meaningful difference. You know, I can come home and not every day I've saved the world, but I can come home in a day and I know and a family's thanked me for something I've done to change that child or their life in a way. So it's a privilege.
Is there anything still surprise you about your job at the moment?
So I think things surprise me about the field as a whole is what you can do. And one thing that surprised me at uni, which a lot of people might not know, is that speech and language therapy work with people who've swallowing problems. It's not actually just speech and language. So it's a really big part of some people's jobs. So if you're like an adult therapist out in the community, you might go to care homes to do swallowing assessments if individuals are choking or having difficulty eating and drinking. Or if you are a pediatric therapist who works in special schools for children, perhaps with cerebral palsy and needs like that, they can have difficulties with swallowing and choking. So that's a bit of a surprising one.
That is.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I had no idea.
Yeah, it seems really random, but we study so much the anatomy of the head and neck. So we've kind of got that knowledge there. I say we, I don't. I'm not a swallowing therapist. So it's definitely a bit of an unknown world to me, but pretty cool. And I've got a colleague about to take a new job working with neonates. So brand newborn babies who can have those difficulties and working with that mother and baby attachment and helping support their swallowing difficulties. So really, really interesting.
Wow. That's like starting a new project. It's like a new baby. You don't know what's happened here. It's like, just what do I do with this?
Honestly, it's like fair play to them, but I think I'd be a bit terrified. But it's a really cool job. Really cool.
It is. And it sounds so broad. I'm really curious to know what skills you need to be a good speech and language therapist.
Yeah, it is broad. And that's something at uni I find quite overwhelming. And it's something maybe to make people aware of that you don't have to know it all, because you learn about all of these adult conditions and all of this neurology. So everything happening in the brain. Then you learn about all this child development or voice problems or stammering, so many areas, but you don't need to know it all. And when you start working, you definitely don't need to. But the skills that are just intrinsic to us as people, and you just strengthen those. So being a good listener, to understand people's needs, communicating effectively so that you can then advocate and work with people who perhaps can't, problem solving. So there's a lot of assessment. We need to assess an individual's needs. What's going on here? What's their strengths? What skills are perhaps a bit more difficult for them that we can help develop? And overall, working with people. So wanting to work as part of a team. I work closely with education staff, audiologists who assess a child's hearing, pediatricians. So there's a lot of that. There's a lot of collaboration. So really core skills.
Also, just out of curiosity, is knowing a sign language part of the language speech therapist, or is that separate?
So yeah, you don't have to know sign language to be a speech and language therapist. So sign language, it depends where you're from. So here it's British Sign Language that people would use. And that's people who have a hearing impairment would use that as a way to communicate. So individuals who are deaf. I do work 2 days a week in a school for children who are deaf. So I do have some knowledge of sign language. It's tricky. You know, it's got its own grammar. It's a full language. It's hard to learn. But no, the majority of speech and language therapists, anyone who does not work with individuals who are deaf, would not need to know that. But there's other systems. So there's some sign-based systems. A very famous one's called Makaton. There's a TV program, a guy called Mr. Tumble, who uses it. So some individuals, children and adults with learning disabilities, for example, can use Makaton as a way to support spoken language. So they might show you and use some language to talk. So lots of different things, but you do not have to know sign language.
So this next question is a bit random, or sort of almost a statement. Let's say we've got a listener who's just listening out of interest, and perhaps they may have a need for a speech and language therapist. Is there anyone who, you know, you think should keep an eye out for something, or maybe they are experiencing some difficulties and that you might actually be able to help them with something? So for example, like, could you say, if you're a young person or an adult who's experiencing X, Y, Z, did you know that a speech and language therapist could help you? Like, those who are maybe undiagnosed even, this is sort of like your platform to say, hey, you know, I can actually help you with X, Y, Z.
Yeah, gosh, as you've said, Gillian, it's so broad what we can do. So there's so many things, but I'll think of a couple of examples from different populations that we would work with. So for example, if you're a parent of a young child and you're worried they're not meeting their developmental milestones, they're maybe not talking when you're expecting them to, they're that little bit older, you can have support from an SLT, a speech and language therapist. If you are in school and you're really struggling to understand what the teacher's saying to you, struggling with your reading, your writing, and think it might be because you're not sure what the language is, what the words mean, an SLT could help you. If your speech is tricky for other people to understand, so the way you say words doesn't sound 100% intelligible, it's got some errors there, an SLT could help you. And getting older and older, if you're a teenager, for example, who really struggles with social communication and interaction and knowing how to kind of engage with other people, an SLT could help you. And for adults, if you've had an acute illness like a stroke and are struggling again to understand what people are saying to you, it's very common after a stroke, or to express yourself, an SLT can help you. If you have a progressive condition where you know your communication skills may change over time, then an SLT could help you. Or if you're choking, anything like that. There's just so many ways. If you have a stammer, of course, is one that people might be more aware of. Or if you're a teacher and a singer or someone who uses their voice a lot and you maybe are losing your voice quite often, you've got strain on it, some pain, an SLT could help you. So it's huge.
Oh my God. You sound like a marketing thing. Like, oh, SLT could help you.
It's the awareness isn't there of what we do. And you can kind of see why when you think about what we do, because there's just so much that how do you raise that awareness when like, it's just so much, but that's an advantage of it.
That's awesome. So as a language speech therapist, what are the three different brands are they individual expect to earn per year, I suppose?
Okay, so again, very variable. I'm sure if you're independent working privately, I wouldn't really know how much money that would be. But here, let's go with the NHS. So working publicly, and you would entry level be on about £25,000, so British pounds, and it's incremental. So as you gain experience, you move up your price, your salary bracket. So no, I'm not for sale. And then kind of mid-range.
It's the hell I was talking about.
Honestly.
Don't say so short.
So mid-range, you would be, I would say, about 30,000 British pounds to 50,000. And that would be when you're developing specialisms and what you're doing, becoming a more advanced practitioner. So if you're thinking around £45,000, which is where a lot of individuals would be kind of some years into their career, that's about $60,000. So for kind of an average salary. And then you have those options to keep working your way up the ladder in the health service. You can become a manager, a team leader, and maybe go into greater management level within the health service. And you'll be upwards of $65,000.
And you've actually mentioned a few titles. You mentioned the assistant before and just now, you know, team leader or a manager. What is the structure to the top of your industry and what are those job titles?
Yeah, sure. So in the structure that I'm in, it's done by banding. So for example, a band 4 is a speech and language therapy assistant. And then when you graduate as a new therapist, you're a band 5 speech and language therapist. So quite often you take quite a general post and you might get experience working with different client groups, or it might be rotational, work around different areas. And then when you become a band 6, you're a specialist speech and language therapist. So you might have an interest. You might specialize in stammering. You might specialize in hearing impairment, things like that. A band 7 is advanced speech and language therapist. In my post that I'm currently in my team, they don't have managerial responsibility, but they might supervise a lot of people and be kind of just different responsibilities there. They have some allocated jobs. And above that, you're starting to move into line management. So managing other therapists, looking at the broader kind of plan of how you're working as a team. So it's quite structured and you can move up that. Yeah.
I just got to go track back one more and just going back to the salary and stuff. Is it possible for individual to own a business where, you know, whether salary or within the mid-range or entry level can be expanded? Like, let's say, for example, somebody want, you know, get a lot of speech therapists who work for them. Can that be possible if somebody want to do that?
That's definitely possible. So there's quite a lot of that going on down in cities like London, for example. You see a lot of that advertised. So somebody might own a private company and have 20 therapists working for them. So I wouldn't be sure on what the amount of money would be involved there, but that kind of more business model side of things is definitely an option. Or working for yourself as well, being self-employed, that's an option. So there's a lot of different ways to go about that.
So what would you say is the reason people failing to, I guess, enter or, you know, follow the path of a speech therapist?
I think a lot of the time people stumble into the path because they've not heard of us. They've not heard of it before. Yeah. A lot of them might do subjects that, you know, loosely are related. They might be interested in psychology and or get a degree in psychology and then learn a little bit about speech therapy and go and do it a postgraduate. Sometimes they might know someone who's needed support from us. So it's just a bit varied and everybody's journey into it is very different, I would say. So you'll have to talk to more speech and language therapists to find out why.
Trust me. There's plenty of them lining up right now. We'll have to have this conversation.
I'm sure. Is there anything that you wish you'd known before you started your first job?
You don't need to know it all. And I think people put a lot of pressure on themselves in every field, no matter what they do. You've got to come in day one, hit the ground running and be fantastic. And I think I learned more in my first year working than I ever learned at university about how to do it. You learn on the job, you learn real time. So don't worry about knowing it all. No matter what you do, come in with enthusiasm, ask questions and look keen. And if you want to be there and you want to learn, that's how it's going to work out. That's the most important thing.
Career-wise, what is the most difficult or one of the personal thing that you overcome as a challenge in a way?
Yeah, so for myself, I take too much on. I think I put a lot of pressure on myself that I need to fix everything. And I think that's something that's easy to do when you work with individuals who need help, you know, but it's bigger than me. And I've just had to come to accept over the years that I'm just a little part of things, a very small part. And if I can try and do my best to change things in a small way for someone, that's all I can do. So I sometimes get bogged down in the bigger picture. And I think that's maybe easier to do in public sector, where the health service and things, you know, is so under-resourced. It's hard to feel like you kind of battle through sometimes to achieve. So definitely, I've had to just accept what I can do and be okay with that.
Yeah, I mean, one thing that I really liked that one of our previous guests said was, all you need to do is leave the world a better place than it was when you entered it. And if you do that by helping one person, then that's
exactly
enough. And you help people every day.
Exactly.
So, and you don't need to worry about
you
that.
Just... Thank you. Well, it's just sometimes you work with a child and you get to know them really well. And there's obviously so many cases where you feel I could have done more. I should be doing more. And that child's not accessing their full potential. And then you work with one who you've managed to have the resources, you've managed to have a good support network there, and they just get it. And you can see a twinkle in their eye and they go, this makes sense to me. Or people can understand me. And it does. It makes it worth it. And you're not going to get that every time, by far. And there's going to be families you don't gel with. And there's going to be other things kind of contributing to that. So it's just about those little moments and focusing on them. I think as a population, we focus on the negative, don't we? And we pick ourselves apart. And it's just focusing on what has been your success and really trying to keep that at the front of the mind.
And just before we go to our next round, it's just so amazing though, like things that we take for granted, they're the thing that you are trying to bring people, these kids and these parents can have those access to, like, you know, things that are with, well, I'm not going to call them human right, basically, with ability to communicate, like, ability, you know, to listen in a way. Like, I don't know, for me, it's just amazing. Like that, if I do a job like that, it's just the amount of appreciation you have for the thing that you take for granted, like ability to never communicate, just be quiet all the time. Like, I talk a lot. And for me to be, and for me to be, for me to be deprived for that, and I can't have that, I can't communicate. Oh,
yeah. You and Jillian don't need my help. You guys are good. But
inside, like, you know what I mean? Like, and I just think that's kind of like, it's amazing, actually. Like, yeah.
You're right though, Pierre. And this is the problem, because those people cannot advocate for themselves. And that's the real inherent difficulty when people don't understand our role and what we do is. The client users, the service users who we support aren't able to do it themselves. So we need to try and raise our awareness to support them, because they have inherent difficulties with communication. So somebody's got to do it on their behalf, you know, and it's such an interesting field in that not everybody's going to communicate like you or I verbally. So some speech therapists specialize in helping people who use alternative means of communication. So probably the most famous example is like what Stephen Hawking would have used to communicate. Yeah. So his whole computer set up with switches. So that's something else that we can do. And it's just giving that person the ability to communicate as best they can. It's so important, as you say, and it is a human right.
It's amazing. And I suppose, like, two things I'm going to say is, like, anybody think of like something that you really, really like, take that away from you for a day.
Yeah.
That's just what I think anyway. And also, how do you think us people, which quotation mark, have this ability to communicate? How do you think we can better advocate for it or show some sort of awareness in a way?
Just in everyday actions. You know, if you are engaging with someone that you think is having some difficulty communicating with you, so maybe it's an elderly person who might have dementia, is taking time, you know, having time for people. They might not communicate at the rate that three of us do, and many people probably don't. We're pretty fast. So just being understanding and being aware that when people communicate with you and you think, oh, this doesn't really seem normal, or why are they getting on like that? It might not just be that they're choosing to. So just being a bit more understanding of people, I think. Yeah. And we should all do that anyway, cool. Shouldn't we?
should be the fact. After our next round, which is the myth busting round, which is where we just ask some questions. Some of them might be controversial. At this rate that we're going, none of them will be controversial. I think they'll be called all lighthearted. A speech and language therapist is pretty competitive. Myth or fact?
I would say fact. in that it is a very small career, that very few courses. So in Scotland, there's two universities. In Northern Ireland, there's one.
Wow.
And in England, I think there's, I could be wrong, but I think there's about 12. So there's small numbers, small intake numbers. So yeah, pretty competitive.
Is there anything that people can do to put themselves in a better position to increase their chances of getting into uni or a job?
Definitely those experiences, Gillian. So just that, working with those groups and volunteering and, you know, taking your own time with those groups of people that we would support in any capacity. So if you're interested in children, you know that, and right up through to adults. So definitely applying your experiences. Things like a personal statement are, I think, super important in what we do.
You need to be multilingual in order to be a speech and language therapist. Myth or fact?
Myth, but a real asset. Real asset. We work with a lot of individuals who are multilingual, and I think being able to communicate with them in their home language would be fantastic. We do use interpreter services, probably on a daily basis. So we do always try and support individuals in their home language and ensure that their language needs are assessed in all languages that they use. But I'd love to be multilingual.
There is no diversity in speech and language therapists. Myth or fact?
Fact. It's not a diverse field, and it needs to be, and it should be. It should be representative of the people that we support. But there's a lot of good initiatives coming through to try and change that. And so in the UK, our professional body is the Royal College of Speech and Language Therapists. They have a lot of work ongoing since events earlier in 2020 to support members to be actively anti-racist. And there's a lot of learning and a lot of reflection going on around that, and a lot of live events that we can attend, which is great. And there's some great resources out there across the world. If anybody wants to look them up. So on Instagram, there's a great page at SLTs of Colour, and it's speech and language therapists from Black and minority ethnic backgrounds just talking about their careers, any difficulties that they've had. And it's just, it's great. And a fantastic podcast called Hashtag Listen In, which is three Black speech and language therapists working in the United Kingdom sharing their experience. So there's resources there, and I'd like to hope that it's going to change over time. Yeah.
Speech and language challenges are only physical and only about speaking. Myth or fact?
Myth. I think we've dispelled that one a bit already today. So yeah, not just physical, not just talking, pretty much everything in regards to communication and swallowing.
A speech and language therapist only help children. Myth or fact?
Myth.
Well, that's all good too.
All the
we answer that.
Honestly, this myth busting section is almost pointless. So the next question is, you've been way too efficient in this podcast.
I don't.
Efficient or blabbing? There's a bright line there.
Yeah, we'll go efficient. Because the three of us are blabbers, so I mean, we can't say that. I'll ask the last one anyway. Speech and language therapists only work in hospitals. Myth or fact?
Myth. Anywhere you want us, we will be.
On to our final section, and this one is called Looking Forward, and essentially we're trying to help young people get to where you are now in speech and language therapy. So specifically, what kind of work experience could our listeners try to get before entering your industry?
Any that, again, involves being around people. So just any experience engaging with people, any experience with charities, I would say would be really useful. And because not even charities who work with individuals who have communication needs, but learning those skills and advocating for other people is super important. And yeah, just life experience. You can apply anything to what we do. So I think just thinking outside the box, but there's loads of information available online, and I'll pass a kind of careers guide over to you guys that has a bit more of an idea. And generally, you can contact your local health trust and they'll take you for some work experience and let you kind of shadow a speech and language therapist or any other health professional if you fancy seeing how the wider team, if you want to see what a physio or an occupational therapist does and learn about speech and language therapy through working through them and things. So lots and lots of options available there. So yeah.
What are the three things our listeners can take away from this podcast?
I had a bit of a think about this because I think there's so many that you can take away.
Well, give us six then, I don't know.
Give you three.
Ooh, out of it.
I would say, and I think we've made this pretty clear today, that speech and language therapy has something for everyone. If you're scientific, if you like technology, if you like languages, kind of that musical performance background, there's something for you. If your skills aren't maybe reflected in what my experience is, and you don't think that you're like me, not every speech and language therapist is, and it's worth talking to different people, because I'm definitely not just like a prototype for what you need to be like. And some people just don't want to work with children. I never wanted to work with adults. So there's some things that you quite clearly, you don't have to do at all. I knew I would never want to work in a hospital setting or work with adults. And some people say, I just don't ever want to work with kids. So I just think there's something for everyone would be my first. Secondly, I think job satisfaction is key. It's key to happiness in what you do. And I know that at that age, if you're a school leaver or if you're considering a career change, there's a lot of pressure on what's the salary? How do you get to the top? How do you become the big name? And, you know, that motivates some people. That's completely understandable, but it's not the be all and end all. Being happy with what you do is very important because your job is so much of your life. It's a lot of your week and you need to be happy being there. So that's probably my second. And thirdly, academics isn't everything. And that's something else I think there's a lot of pressure on. So there's pressure on kind of getting that perfect salary and getting that perfect promotion. But when you're younger, it's you need to get this exam and this grade. And I find that quite difficult for people because not everybody's academic. We don't all want to sit and study. And I didn't really enjoy that. I'm a practical person. I want to go out and learn and do. So get your grades to the point that you have to maybe get to uni. If at the moment you have to do that. But if you aren't academic, don't be discouraged because you'll bring so much to a career above and beyond that. Because it's about who you are. And it's about, I think it's important to finish on, it's about your enthusiasm.
That is a wonderful note to finish on. And I think the three of us are indeed enthusiastic and we'll take that forward the rest of our days and careers. Well, yeah, thank you so much, Tora. You've been the one person who's made both Pierre and I reconsider our career choices. You might get two additional speech and language therapists.
Oh, thank you for having me, guys. It's been great to have that platform when we are so misunderstood. So I hope people can go away and not just think we are like the guy sticking marbles in a mouth in the King's Speech.
Honestly, really wonderful to have you. And thanks very much. There's a lot of information there to consider. And I'll be listening to this podcast up and down.
Fab. Thanks a million, guys.
Thank you. Thanks for listening. Please join us again next episode as we explore yet another profession.
Your support is always appreciated. So please subscribe to Breaking Through Career Podcast and find us on social media.
Also, don't forget to check out the Resource Hub at www.breakingthroughcareers.com, where you can find advice for school leavers, university students, and career changers.
I did then what I knew how to do. Now that I know better, I do better. Maya Angelou.
See you next time.